Blog Talk Radio.
The special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Folks, you are here live on the MRN Broadcasting Channel here on Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, James Bell of The Boxing Source. I am the lead boxing analyst of the Cold Hard on Sports through the website and the radio show that comes on every Tuesday night at 8:30 on the same channel, MRN Broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio. And also do a few other articles as well on the CBC on sports. May have a sense of one on the sport of college football coming up soon, so be on the lookout for that. But in the meantime, we are here talking about boxing. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on to. You'll be able to talk in live on the show. We'll be getting into the show here in a little bit, but we'll get a couple of commercials out of the way, and then we'll get right into it with the boxing talk. So we'll go through those commercials and then get into it. You are listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida, great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network. Better than diamond ring. That's why we're
here to sing. Jameis Winston is just stupid.
It's yours.
All right, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Ball Talk Radio. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, pretty much getting into the talk here as we're going over what happened last night in Oakland as we had the main event there for HBO Boxing as Andre Ward went up against Alexander Brand at the Oracle Arena. Of course, Andre Ward is slated to fight Sergey Kovalev in the light heavyweight division for Sergey Kovalev's light heavyweight championships. And that fight will take place on November 19th. That's scheduled to take place at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Their brand new venue that, you know, has had a couple of fights over there so far. I mean, they had that Canelo Khan fight take place there in May. And now we're going to soon have Sergey Kovalev versus Andre Ward there in Las Vegas. But here, in the meantime, we're, you know, basically going over the fight between Andre Ward and Alexander Brand. That was for a minor light heavyweight championship, the WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight title. As Andre Ward came in there 29-0. Alexander Brand came in there with 25 wins, one loss. With his lone loss being against Battle Jack back in 2012. He was, you know, pretty much going through kind of a winning streak. He won a couple of minor titles there, like the WBF International Super Middleweight Championship, the Silver Super Middleweight Championship for the WBC, and the Latino Super Middleweight title. He also won the WBF Super Middleweight Championship last year and pretty much a year ago before moving up to fight Andre Ward after one singular fight in December. So he was, you know, had that lone loss against Badu Jack there at Super Middleweight, but hadn't really lost a fight since then. And, you know, basically just had this challenger against Andre Ward. And, you know, the thing with Andre Ward fighting Alexander Brand, of course, there was a good number of people that wanted to criticize this fight. Everybody knew what the end game was. Everybody knew that, you know, Andre Ward was, you know, going to fight Sergey Kovalev anyway, so it really didn't matter much who Andre Ward was going to fight in this particular fight. I had those that, you know, that agreement, three fights before fighting Sergey Kovalev, and he just went ahead and, you know, got that thing with, you know, Paul Smith back in June of last year, and then fighting Sullivan Barrera in March of this year, and then Alexander Brandon. So now he pretty much has about, you know, 3 months before he goes up here against Sergey Kovalev. But in this fight against Alexander Brand, he, you know, basically scored a shutout, controlled the fight from round one to round 12. So in good combinations, was in control of himself and the fight. Brand didn't necessarily you know, bring anything to the table against Andre Ward here in this particular fight. I think he was, you know, basically trying to not get knocked out. You know, not get knocked out in this particular fight against Andre Ward. And so, and, you know, with that, you know, I think, you know, Ward was able to just get his work in this particular fight against Alexander Brand, score the, you know, shutout victory against Brand, 108 through all three judges' scorecards. He showed his versatility in the ring as he, you know, was able to fight in an orthodox style and a southpaw style in, you know, both particular, you know, in the ring there. He was able to switch his styles up and still was able to keep the pace. He was able to tag Alexander Brand a couple of times, especially in the second half of the fight with right hands, as he was trying to work the body, pretty much work the body early, and then drop, you know, pretty much Alexander Brand had dropped his guard. So, you know, when you drop your guard or drop that left hand, you're going to leave yourself open to the right, over the top. And so if, you know, any type of boxer that, you know, is an orthodox fighter, they're going to, of course, they lead with the left jab and everything, and then they try to get you with their stronger hand, the right hand. But also what they could do is they also could feint with the left hand and then, you know, get you to try to look for that left hand. And then, you know, as that song says, watch for the hook. And usually, you know, you try to put your guard up so that you can watch for the hook. If you're getting hit with a couple of good body shots over to your left side, you're going to be trying to protect your left body more later on in the fight. And then, you know, once that happens, you're leaving your chin open on that left side and pretty much the right left side of your face open for that right hook by your opponent. And so in the second half of the fight, there were multiple times where Andre Ward was able to score with the right hand and basically, you know, get the better of Alexander Brand in each and every round. And like I said, Justin Steve Morrow, David Sutherland, and Michael T all scored at 120 to 108 for Andre Ward. So Andre Ward is able to, you know, get ahead and move his record to 30 wins and zero losses. Still has 15 KOs to his slate. And Alexander Brand goes to 25-2, with, like I said, his only other loss to current super middleweight champion Badu Jack. Brand will probably, you know, go back down to super middleweight. Not sure if he'll, you know, get a shot at a super middleweight championship, maybe against Zerto, when Zerto recovers from, you know, his injuries, because the reports were saying that he was, you know, nursing a few injuries here and there after his win over Arthur Abraham to win that WBO super middleweight belt. But like I said, Alexander Brand goes down to 25-2 there with this shutout loss. Now all there is left for Andre Ward is the fight against Sergey Kovalev for the WBA, IBF, and WBO light heavyweight championships. Both guys coming in there undefeated, both with 30 wins. Sergey Kovalev comes in there with 26 KOs, and Andre Ward comes in there with 15 KOs. And I think here, I mean, it's going to be a fairly very, very good fight between these two. And you have, you know, Sergey Kovalev that's, you know, scored, you know, KO victories against, you know, Sean Pascal, Blake Caparello, and, you know, Cedric Agnew and others in reference to getting his titles. And he's defended the WBO light heavyweight championship since 2013 with one of those wins coming against Bernard Hopkins, who, you know, gained the other belts that he has, that he has now, the WBA and IBF light heavyweight championships. And now he's going up against Andre Ward, who is pretty much in his, kind of like his third fight here at the light heavyweight division. Of course, you all know what he was able to do at super middleweight. Defeated the likes of Mikael Kessler, Arthur Abraham, who, you know, once again became champion at super middleweight, Carl Froch, and also Chad Dawson, to become one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport, and still is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. And so, you know, over in the month of November, it's going to be a pretty good matchup here between Kovalev and Andre Ward. I think what's going to be looked at on both sides of this particular fight is if Kovalev is going to be able to handle somebody with the skill level of Andre Ward. I mean, we know about, you know, his fights against Bernard Hopkins, and the thing is, Bernard Hopkins was not at the top of his game at that time there in Boardwalk Hall. You know, it was basically Bernard Hopkins was like a super middleweight type of guy against, you know, Sergey Kovalev, who was a true light heavyweight in the ring. I mean, he was much bigger than Bernard Hopkins coming in there. And, you know, after that first round knockdown that Kovalev scored, it was basically a matter of if, you know, Hopkins could, you know, basically get through the fight without getting knocked out, because there wasn't really much that Hopkins could do against Kovalev in that particular fight to get an upper hand. So, you know, Kovalev had that win against him to gain those other two light-heavyweight titles, and then defended it against John Pascal twice, Najib Mahabedi, and recently against Isaac Chalemba in Russia before this upcoming matchup here against Andre Ward. And so both of these guys are going to be prepared against each other. I think it's going to be the, you know, biggest challenge for, you know, fighters on both, for the fighters on both sides. I think there's, you know, nobody that Ward has faced as, you know, the likes of Sergey Kovalev, and Sergey Kovalev has not faced anybody the likes of Andre Ward. I mean, Andre Ward is, you know, one of the top guys pound for pound in the sport, and Sergey Kovalev is also as well. I mean, but, you know, as far as like an actual comparison, as far as like the resumes are concerned, I think that, you know, the guys that Andre Ward had faced, you know, before his lengthy hiatus, was better than the guys that Sergey Kovalev has faced. And so, you know, with that and also the overall skill level of Andre Ward, I favor Ward to take this fight when it comes up here in 3 months. So I think that will be something that we'll look into a little bit more as the particular fight gets closer and closer here for us. All right, the number to dial in to Talk Boxing Live here is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. All right, I think we had, it was kind of like a semi, you know, slow weekend here in the sport of boxing. I mean, usually, you know, the month of August is, you know, with being the prime summer month, they really haven't, you know, there really isn't that much action or notable fights. They usually come up during the month of August. But we have like a few fights that are coming up here within the schedule, though. You know, one of the, you know, I don't think that Al Heyman says that it's something where there should be a necessary slowdown there in the sport. So there'll be a few PVC cards coming up. We got like something coming up on Friday night over in Verona, New York. They'll have PVC on ESPN there in Verona, New York, headlined by Miguel Flores going up against Ryan Kozlowski. That's a featherweight fight. And also, Brian Perella will be going up against Jordanus Ugas, which is a welterweight fight. And they have like a good number of other fights that are going to be on PVC on ESPN. They actually did have, you know, a PVC on ESPN card. That's on this previous Friday, as they had, I think it was, hold on, if you could just bear me for a moment. It had David Benavidez going up, Benavidez going up against Duggan. As Duggan, Duggan and Benavidez was the headline event there for that Friday Night Fights card that happened last week. And so David Benavidez was able to score the KO win over Duggan there in that 10th round. He did score like a knockdown earlier in the fight, pretty much. And going into the 10th round, the referee saw that Dennis Duggan was in trouble, so he went to their he went to his corner, the corner of Duggan, and said, "If you're really not showing anything here in this 10th round, and you're in big trouble, pretty much going to stop the fight." And that's pretty much what happened there in the 10th round. Benavidez pretty much like took his time against Dennis Duggan. While he did, Benavidez did have the reach advantage there. Duggan was, you know, pretty much game for most of the fight. There were a couple of times where he was able to get to the inside of Benavidez, but starting from that 7th and 8th round, Benavidez was able to score with the uppercut multiple times. And the first knockdown that he had in the fight pretty much came off of the right uppercut that floored Duggan, and Duggan was able to get up before the count reached 10. And then, like I said, in the 10th round, Benavidez was able to get Duggan on the ropes and nearly knock him down again, but the barrage that was happening there with those the offensive output by Benavidez caused the referee to stop the fight there in that 10th round. So Benavidez gets that TKO victory to move to 16-0, and he's there at, you know, super middleweight, 19 years old. Had his debut back in 2013 in Mexico. So he's, you know, pretty much have the, like, a similar start as, you know, a lot of Mexican fighters out there, most notably Canelo Alvarez, who started his career in Mexico at the age of 15. So Benavidez was able to score his 16th win on the main event of Friday night fights against Dennis Duggan. All right, we're just getting a caller in here, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, Jay? This is Terrell calling Tama, checking in.
What's going on there, brother Terrell?
Oh, everything good. Just once again, just excited once again just to talk about boxing this week. I know we didn't have a lot of activity going on this weekend, but despite that, we did have one major fight, which I'm sure you've already addressed at this point. And the main narrative I take from that is, like, once again, the year is slowly coming together. Just with the culmination of this Ward win, now we have the makings of a great fight, the makings of the announcement for someone to be possibly the official, unofficial, official, however you want to call it, pound for pound number one. I mean, it's just a great, great matchup. I will defer back to you just so I can catch up to where we're at in the show right now.
Well, yeah, I went through that Ward-Brand fight where Ward was able to score the shutout decision win against Alexander Brand, you know, keeping his record undefeated to 30-0. Alexander Brand suffered his second loss of his professional career. Yeah, they're just saying, you know, just waiting until November for the light heavyweight title clash against Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward. There, that's going to be November 19th at the T-Mobile Arena. And, you know, also, you know, like I said before, I mean, that was pretty much the key thing about the month of August here is usually the month of August doesn't really have that much as far as the sport is concerned in reference to big events. But there will be a couple of, you know, notable fights here and there. We will have Errol Spence Jr., going up against former WBA regular and welterweight champion Leonard Boundou on August 21st in a IBF welterweight eliminator. And also, you know, a notable fight, Antonio Margarito will be fighting Ramon Alvarez on August 13th in Mexico. So we got like a couple of notable fights here and there. And yes, Roy Jones is also going to be fighting in the month of August too. So if people want, they could also see Roy Jones in action. So yeah, we got a few things here and there. We also got another caller in here, area code 205. What's going on, Richard?
What's up, James? Roy Jones, funny, huh? This is Mike Grady, by the way.
I mean, he's still fighting, man. Come on, man. Y'all must have forgot.
Hey, this man still committing his legacy. You can't hate on legacy.
Yeah, I can't hate on legacy, but that was the past, and this is the present, and he is past it.
Yeah, but if it's in your system, I imagine it's kind of tough to get it out if that's what you're used to, and you're used to being, you know, that dude who always could conquer most everybody you face, and then you know, you're old and you're losing it. It's like, yeah, you got to let it go. Like, your body telling you to let it go, but your mind sort of is not at the same speed as your body, sort of.
Well, I tell you, we all love Roy Jones Jr., but his place in boxing is already secure. But he is definitely, in a sense, tarnishing his legacy now. I mean, this guy was a dominant fighter throughout the 90s and early 2000s until his decline. And not only that, this guy was an intelligent guy. We know that by means of his commentary on HBO for so many years, which was laughable at times when you see some of the exchanges between him, Jim Lampley, and Larry Merchant. It was like, in a sense, sometimes Jones was the voice of reason sometimes. Like, because, you know, we all know that when you watch HBO boxing, they're very biased against certain fighters and pro for other their fighters and stuff like that. And Roy oftentimes would come in and give it to him raw, in a sense, and give it to him real. So we respect his intelligence of that. But now for him to keep on fighting, you've been there at the top of the mountain, right? And you've seen it all in boxing. You've seen Hopkins go to still hanging on, and you see the commentary about things like that. Why? You're too smart for that. You're too good for that, you know. And that's why I say he's tarnishing his legacy. It's sad. It's sad, man.
I mean, as long as he fights the right person, then he'll be okay. You know, he can't fight none of these young Thundercats who, you know, bring in the pain, or he's going to get, you know, laid out again. But if he fights somebody who's, like, slow and, you know, just happened to get a belt out of the blue or something, then, yeah, that's a fight for him to take. Sort of like how Shane Mosley does. Shane Mosley ain't stupid. He knows that, you know, if he does fight somebody, it has to be who the last person Shane Mosley fought?
He fought David Avdijian, actually, for the number one contendership of the WBA welterweight championship.
To hope to fight the winner of Sean Porter and Thurman, right?
Correct.
Yeah, he ain't stupid. He ain't finna fight either or one of those two. Now, let's happen to say that belt get away and go to somebody a little bit more manageable. He might fight a Adrian Broner. He'll probably fight an Adrian Broner, you know, like somebody like that. But I don't know. AB, in his right mind, would probably give, you know, him some trouble. But that's all I'm saying. If he fight the right person, he's okay.
It's kind of funny that, like, when people talk about Adrian Broner, they say, like, they have to bring in a caveat. Like, you know, Adrian Broner with the right mind, or, quote-unquote, a focused Adrian Broner. I'm like, what? Why does it always have to come with something with Adrian Broner? I mean, it's either you get what you get with Adrian Broner or you don't. So, I mean, I don't know what Adrian Broner is at the top of his game or not. I can't really pinpoint to a particular, you know, fight where he was at the top of his game or something like that. It might have been a couple of years ago when he was at a lower division or not. But in reference to Roy Jones, yeah, he can fight those minor guys or whatever it is. So he does have this, you know, upcoming fight on August 13th in Pecola against Rodney Moore, who is there at a record of 17-11-2, and basically losing his previous 9 fights. But as far as, like, you know, an actual career in boxing, you know, trying to challenge for, you know, a high spot in the division of Roy Jones is in, man. He could only just do one thing.
Pick up Elsa.
Yeah, because as far as that's concerned, it's a wrap for him. And it's like y'all said, he's a great commentator, you know, on HBO, but, you know, I mean, he's among the list of many, you know, good commentators that they have that isn't named Jim Lampley or Larry Merchant. I mean, they've had, you know, Roy Jones. They've had, at times, Antonio Tarver. They've had Lennox Lewis. They've had George Foreman, and they've had Emmanuel Stewart. So it's usually always that third guy that they have that's always the best commentator on HBO. But
yeah,
it doesn't seem like, you know, they want to keep those guys there as the third commentator to, you know, actually bring some balance into that particular broadcast team. You know, Roy Jones is, you know, basically trying to fulfill, his thing where he was trying to get, what, up to five fights out of the way by the end of this year, I think that was. I think it was like five fights he wanted to do.
I thought it was before he retired, right? It wasn't before he retired?
Yeah, about like five fights before he retires or something like that. At least, you know, that's what he wanted to do.
Well, even speaking briefly on those the list of commentators that HBO had on there from with Roy Jones, I definitely loved him on the network for one, just being a black presence for one. But I don't know how many times I would laugh personally when he's from Florida, and you know, we all have some where you're from. You sometimes you have your little dialects and stuff like that. And at certain times, he would enunciate certain words, and that where his phone would come out, I would just laugh. And even to the point where with George Foreman was on TV, I love George Foreman performing on HBO, but it's so funny. He would deliver a quote or just a comment, make a comment on something, and turn right into the camera and get that million-dollar smile. I was just laughing. I was amazed the guys coached up. But I definitely love all those guys, to include Lennox Lewis as well, you know.
Yeah, I like Lennox Lewis as a commentator too. I mean, he was like pretty good in a good number of those fights, and then when like an upset knockout or like a knockout out of the blue came out during the fight, he'd be like overselling the knockout. It would just, you know, come out really funny. Yeah, Mike, since you just came in here, we went over the Andre Ward Alexander Brand fight that was on HBO last night, where, you know, Ward scored that unanimous shutout decision win over Alexander Brand, and he was basically on his way to facing Sergey Kovalev on November 19th. So just wanted to get your thoughts real quick about, you know, Andre Ward, and then what may happen up here in this upcoming fight against Sergey Kovalev.
So I'm going to be honest. I tried to watch the fight twice, and I fell asleep on it. Twice. But that's only because I had a long week. But the parts that I did see, Andre Ward is definitely it's no shot at Andre Ward. He's definitely – what's the word, a chameleon. Like, he definitely changes, you know, the style to fit or conquer his opponent. And Brand was obviously no one who was going to, you know, press the issue. So I guess he did what he needed to do. You know, like, I always try to find some positive in everything, and the positive that I found was that he changed his style. And so, I don't know. Like, I was trying to, like, think about what looked different in his style, because it definitely was different. Like, his demeanor and stuff was different. It was something that was different, but I couldn't, like, pinpoint it, and I didn't go back and watch it to, like, actually look for what I thought was different. But there was something about it that was, like, strikingly different. As far as the future is concerned, I agree with the commentators where they're like, Ward has the style to neutralize a Kovalev, a style like Kovalev. You know, he has that style to, like, frustrate him and probably make him start thinking and stuff too. But you can't, you know, never down Kovalev's hit fit, because if he touch you, it's over with. But that's, you know, to speak to Andre Ward's, you know, like, dominance, that's why he's so dominant, is because he's naturally a left-hander. And then he already strong in his left hand, and he'd be really, you know, bullying people around with his strength and you know, his ability to move. So that's why he's, you know, better than a lot of people, is because where you usually have a right-hander who may be dominant on one foot, you know, now you got a natural left-hander who can move just as swiftly or just as fluidly off their off foot as they do with their dominant foot as well too. And the same thing with their dominant and you know, and their less dominant hand. So his ability to have the use of both hands is what makes him dangerous. And so people always like sleep on his power, like he ain't powerful enough. But I don't know. I think that I think he is powerful. You know, like if he sees something in you and he see that he can dog you, it's over for you. Mm-hmm. But you know,
yep,
I'm sure that you know he will probably be more cautious with Kovalev. But if Kovalev got like a tink in his armor, same way he did the other light heavyweight that he fought, who went down, Chad Dawson, you know, he'll exploit you. You know, if there's a cut or something, he'll exploit that cut in your armor. I don't know. I think that Ward will beat Kovalev. I think Ward should win.
Yeah. I mean, I favor Andre Ward in the fight as well. I mean, his versatility in the ring and his ability to, you know, control himself in the ring in pretty much almost any situation against any type of competition that he has, you know, makes him have the, you know, advantage against Sergey Kovalev. And to me, I mean, that, you know, basically shows that, you know, he should be able to handle what Sergey Kovalev has against him. And I think it's going to be a good little matchup, not just between, you know, Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev, but it'll also be a good matchup between the trainers as well. I mean, you have John David Jackson on one side, and then you have,
Virgil Hunter.
Virgil Hunter on Ward's side. So it'll be a good little matchup between, you know, the fighters and the trainers in this particular matchup as well. Now, I really would like to see, you know, whoever has the upper hand early in the fight with the trainer on the opposite side will do in order to, you know, have this fighter make adjustments in the ring in the later rounds.
Well, I have a comment on that. We know exactly who Kovalev is, right? Come forward. And I don't recall any of his recent fights where he's been made to get back on the defensive, you know? So with that said, does Kovalev, despite the fact that he got a good trainer in his corner, does that make him even more tailor-made for Ward at this point? Because all that he knows how to do is to come forward and be aggressive. So when you got the ability like Ward to have good lateral movement, know how to catch some punches when you need to, you know how to smother up when you need to, or just even hold on when you need to, I think that's gonna frustrate Kovalev and from that point get him out of his game plan. Even from that point, and that's in the point when the fight where John David Jackson, well, this is what you need to do. Don't let him hold you. Keep pumping that jab and stuff like that. But even if that comes to that point, does Kovalev have enough mental discipline to listen to his corner? Because he hasn't been challenged. You know, he has not been challenged. And even on top of that, like there's also some discussion on social media too that if it goes 12 rounds, that they were Warwick get job. And I don't think I'm trying to remember back from years back when a prominent fighter like this lost a decision in a fight that got quote unquote job. I don't recall that in recent history. I mean, you guys can probably help me on that, but like I said, Kovalev, he's programmed to go forward, kill and destroy. That's what he does. And but like I said, he's never had no top fighter that can give him different angles and different movement. And that's certainly why I think that Kovalev is going to make the Ward. It's going to be great. It's going to be hectic because we know that Kovalev can hurt you at any time. And that's my question for Ward. How is he going to take that power? And we do know that Ward is facing some good punchers. But we'll see. But you can't hit what you can't see, what's not in front of you.
Right.
Yeah. So to one of your points, I think in the Hopkins fight, he showed that he can box moving backwards. Like, that was my takeaway from the Hopkins fight. Yeah, Hopkins is slow and old, but, you know, he didn't, like, punch one too many times. Like, he showed that he can get off one, two, or three punches and then continue moving or whatever. So I think that he can use his reach, because that's what I took away from Hopkins' fight, that, you know, he could use the reach and he didn't just, you know, that's probably, I hadn't watched all of his fights, but that's one fight where I did see him moving laterally or even sideways or backwards or something like that, you know, in that particular fight. But, yeah, for the most part, he is seek and destroy. Come forward, get you, go get you. And if he does fight that fight, then, yeah, Ward will definitely, you know, like, you know, dodge the first wave or so and then come back with that counterattack.
Yeah. Terrell, you bring up a pretty good point in reference to Sergey Kovalev, and Mike, you know, added that little part about, you know, him fighting Hopkins. You know, he was able to, you know, fight off his back foot and utilize his reach. You know, that was, you know, about Kovalev, that was like one of the questions that, you know, I may have had coming up to this upcoming fight against Andre Ward, is that, you know, Kovalev, you know, up to this point has basically been a fighter that comes forward against the opponents that he has, because, you know, he's pretty much been the guy that, you know, is the unstoppable force against his opponents. I mean, he really hasn't fought anybody that, you know, could necessarily, you know, try, you know, match or surpass his power, you know, up to that point. You know, with the exception of the, you know, jaw that he had a long time ago. But, you know, other than that, he's pretty much been the, you know, the bigger fighter, the one with the more power and so on and so forth. So here he's going to be going up against, you know, a guy that, you know, has more skill than he does in the ring, and, you know, knows how to control the ring better than he does. So it'll be a pretty much an interesting matchup for Sergey Kovalev here, if he's going to be able to give Andre Ward a different look than what, you know, a lot of people kind of remember Sergey Kovalev to be. And the other thing was, there was something that I raised in a couple of, you know, boxing forums and message boards, that if the fight is fairly close and it goes to 12 rounds, I would say that they may side with Sergey Kovalev against Andre Ward. And the reason why I say that is because of, you know, what basically has been happening in the past in reference to Andre Ward. I mean, the 2.5-year layoff that Andre Ward had was not just because of injury. It was because of, you know, fights not being able to come to fruition either on the side of the opponent or on the side of the network. And I think some of those things that happened with some of those fights being able to fall through came on the side of the network. I mean, there's been other guys that, you know, have been able to have fights that don't seem like they should be, you know, on HBO, but they were able to have them. But here is Andre Ward. Here's a guy that, you know, completed, you know, was one that completed a Super 6 win over on Showtime and then scored the win against Chad Dawson to basically become, you know, one of the two best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. And now all you could get is, you know, one or two other fights for him, and then he's on hiatus for 2.5 years. You know, that doesn't, you know, that shouldn't make that much sense. And so, and now here he is, he comes back after 2.5 years. His first fight back, he doesn't even fight on HBO his first fight back. And then now he has his, you know, two-fight agreement before fighting Sergey Kovalev. And, you know, now he has his fight against Sergey Kovalev. But if people think about it, if Ward beats Kovalev to win those light heavyweight championships, other than a rematch against Kovalev, what else does Andre Ward have to fight their light heavyweight division?
Superman, Dunn Stevenson. Yeah.
I mean, one would think that he would fight Adonis Stevenson, but to me, I feel that Sergey Kovalev has a better chance of fighting Adonis Stevenson than Andre Ward has, even with those back-and-forth negotiating issues between Yvonne Michelle and Kathy Duva in reference to network issues or whatever it is. I think that Yvonne Michelle with the manager, Al Heyman, is better off working with Sergey Kovalev than Al Heyman working with Roc Nation Sports and Jay-Z and the other guys that they have. Because if people know the backstory between Al Heyman and Jay-Z, Al Heyman used to be a manager for Beyonce before, you know, she really blew up or whatever it is. And they kind of had like a little court battle going on a few years ago. So that back history could still be in effect in reference to, you know, anyone that's under Al Heyman's management team at Roc Nation Sports. So I just feel that, you know, a Sergey Kovalev Adonis Stevenson matchup would be more likely than an Adonis Stevenson Andre Ward matchup.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right about that. Like, what's next for Ward if he does beat Kovalev? I mean, obviously, at this point, if that does happen like that, obviously you want to see a rematch, like between top fighters. I mean, recently when you got Leo Santa Cruz losing to Frampton, there's still that kind of up in the air now if it was their rematch. So it's like, I mean that's different at that class because there's other fights that those guys can make down at those lightweights. But like I said, for Ward, if he has to take this, unify these titles, what's next? I mean, I'm just like Mike. As soon as Mike was speaking, I thought about that too, about Ward fighting Stevenson. But like I said, for me, for Stevenson, this guy is just too comfortable fighting up there in Canada, and at his age, and like I said before, even if Stevenson would have lost to Kovalev, if they would have fought, I still think he would have had a career, you know. But to me, what it looks like to me, he's comfortable up there in Canada with his handlers. They got him getting these fights and making the money, and in a sense, cashing out before he takes a big loss or something like that. So, but like I said, what's next if Ward is to be Kovalev? And what's next out there for him? He already said he does not want to move back up down to 168, so he's stuck kind of in a sense stuck there at 175. And we do know your boy Triple G refuses to come up and wait, so that's not going to happen.
Right.
And as that. It's sad. It's just one weight class, and even in that regard, that Ward would definitely entertain going down to 168 if Triple G voiced some real interest on fighting him. But you know, this is boxing. There's that business side where you got to protect your fighter to a degree. You know,
yeah, if Ward beats Stevenson, Triple G will never fight him. I mean, if Ward beats Kovalev, Triple G would never fight him.
Well, I think Triple G would never wanted to fight him in the first place. I mean, there's something about that whole team between Golovkin, Abel Sanchez, and K2's guy there, Tom Loeffler, that kind of seemed like they're kind of, you know, protective of Gennady Golovkin. When you're talking about, you know, having these type of interviews where, you know, your trainer says that they'll challenge anybody from, you know, 154 pounds to 168 pounds, and then when, you know, Andre Ward gives you a call, they don't, you know, necessarily want to do it there at 168 to, you know, the present times up until April when, you know, Golovkin, you know, scored his win against Dominic Wade and somebody, you know, kind of raised up the question about, you know, Kell Brook saying that he wouldn't mind challenging Gennady Golovkin, and Golovkin was asked about it, and he said that, you know, Kell Brook was too small, and then, you know, now all of a sudden we got, you know, coming up in September, Gennady Golovkin defending his middleweight championship belt against Kell Brook on September 10th in London. So, I mean, there's just, it just like kind of like irritates me sometimes when, you know, some fighters are able to say one thing and then end up doing another that kind of goes completely off the radar of what they're intending on doing. So, I mean, there isn't, you know, much I could say about that. For those that are listening in on Blog Talk Radio through the MRM Broadcasting Channel and want to listen in past 8:30, the overtime portion of the show, call in at 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Somebody else wanted to say something?
Oh, yeah, just kind of off topic a little bit, but what's going on with Tyson Fury? Did he get suspended, and what are the details of that?
They were saying that he might have been suspended, but I think that was lifted. I think I posted an article. It was on BoxingScene.com a few days ago. I kind of like, and I posted it like on one of those forums that are on Facebook that, you know, him along with his brother were cleared of those allegations.
Okay. Yeah, it's just funny because in light of the news, like for example, with a lot of the Russian Olympic athletes being banned from the Olympics, just that the title itself of doping is coming up in major sports again, you know. And when I saw that, I didn't get the details on that. I saw the boxing scene. I didn't get to read it though, but it's just like when the world is going on with these top fighters and top athletes and stuff like that with this doping. It's crazy.
Yeah, but they were able to get cleared in reference to that whole allegation between those two guys. So, you know, we're still, you know, in reference to Tyson Fury, we're still waiting on him to have the rematch against Vladimir Klitschko. So, I think that's going to be coming up either in October. Either be October or November. I'm not necessarily sure when they're able to finalize that, but it was supposed to be slated for July 9th, but that got pushed back. So we're looking for that in potentially October or November. All right, pretty much have like a minute left coming in here before the overtime portion of the show. So. See if you can call in 347-237-5539 so that you can listen in during the overtime section of the show. Like here in the month of August, we still have like a couple of notable fights, mostly on the Premier Boxing Champion Circuit. Like I was saying before, on August 21st, we'll have Errol Spence Jr. going up against Leonard Bundu in an IBF welterweight eliminator. As you know, Errol Spence Jr. is the highest-rated contender for the IBF title, and Leonard Bundu is slated at number 6, former regular champion with his, I think he only had like that one loss against Keith Thurman for that WBA welterweight belt. So that is coming up on August 21st. And, you know, August 23rd, Premier Boxing Champions has a telecast on Fox Sports 1, headlined by the main event, super middleweights Caleb Plant and Wanda Angel. And on PBC on Spike on August 27th in Anaheim, California, Robert Guerrero comes back to fight
David Peralta. It was comeback fight after losing to Danny Garcia for the WBC welterweight title, and also Alfredo Angulo comes back to fight Freddy Hernandez, and that will be a super middleweight fight for Alfredo Angulo. So Premier Boxing Champions pretty much has the televised bouts or televised boxing fights on lock for the month of August until we move into the month of September, where we have Daniel Jacobs going up against Sergio Mora and that's going to be actually on, I think that's on Friday. That's going to be on Friday night. PBC on Spike for Jacobs' regular middleweight championship. And then September 10th will be headlined by Gennady Golovkin against Kell Brook. And also on HBO in Inglewood, California, Roman Gonzalez will be going up against Carlos Quadras for Quadras' junior bantamweight championship. So we have like a few fights here and there in August before we get into September, where a lot of key fights will be taking place.
Yeah, and just briefly on that, even like the Robert Guerrero fight, definitely name someone that's probably definitely moving into opponents that is, if he doesn't get up a good winning streak coming up here, you know, he certainly could figure into the scheme of things in the welterweights division, but that would involve him showing stuff that he's shown, like for example, Proctor and Mayweather fight, you know, but we know that he's pretty much moving back down to just a name status right now at this point, an opponent status, which, I mean, it happens, but you know, once again, that's a scheme of boxing. As much as a boxer rises, he's certainly going to fall out and everything. Just as we see Guerrero going towards the tail end of his career, we're seeing Errol Spence rising up, you know. And it's just so funny when you talk about a fighter's decline and when should he retire. And we talked earlier about Roy Jones Jr., about he's still fighting. One thing we talked about a bit on social media this past week was the fact that Cotto possibly fighting Kirkland and everything. And there were, like, a lot of people blasting that. They were saying, like, well, I don't want to see that. I mean, I said, well, I made a comment. I said, well, the thing about it, you guys have to remember that Cotto is on the downside of his career. And at this point, he's still a viable fighter. And Cotto's still capable of probably winning a title again against a chosen opponent, you know. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind seeing that fight, a Cotto Kirkland. But just, you know, it's about how you want to fall from grace, per se. You know, like we talk about with Roy Jones Jr., he's still fighting at 47, which is ridiculous, you know. But he, like I said, and he's kind of in a sense tarnishing his legacy. But it's all about how you want to fall from the game, you know. Like Guerrero, he's still fighting. He still can do something. Like he's gonna need a win streak, but with Cotto, he's still a viable fight. People still want to see him. I mean, he has a huge base in Puerto Rican base and stuff like that, and not just Puerto Ricans, but across the country. So it's about how you want to withdraw from the game of boxing, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about Miguel Cotto. And, you know, I was thinking about something there in reference to Miguel Cotto that I was thinking about. But I'm going to see if Mike has something real quick before I drop an idea on that.
Like on everything in general?
Yeah.
So the fight that you said is Mbundu? Is that the fight that was? Okay, so I think that's a good fight to. So Bundu is like a guy who sits in his shell. You know, if he wants to survive, he's the type of guy who will try to survive. I think the interesting thing is that you have, you know, Errol Spence who chops down a tree via the body, and so that's interesting in that Bundu will, you know, try to do everything he can to survive, but then you got Spence who will, you know, take the win out of him, literally. And, you know, that'll make it interesting. And I think Bundu, you know, he hit, I don't know if he hit hard enough, but I think he hit okay. He punches okay. So that'll be interesting to see, too, because I think he will touch Errol Spence, but, you know, Errol Spence is going to go crazy on his body, so we'll see how that goes. I forgot the other fights that you mentioned.
That was in August, or that'll be in September?
Well, I'm saying, what, you'll name them one more time for me.
Okay, like you have, you know, also on the same day, well, the day before Golovkin faces Brook, you're going to have the rematch between Daniel Jacobs and Sergio Mora for the WBA regular middleweight championship. And then on September 10th, on the same day of Golovkin Brook, you're going to have Roman, you know, with Gonzalez going up against Carlos Quadras. So Gonzalez is going to move up and wait to challenge Quadras for Quadras' championship.
Okay. So Jacobs Mora, that'll be interesting again, probably, you know. I guess we'll get to see if Danny Jacobs is in fluke fights, because all of his fights have ended, like, you know, let's go rock 'em sock 'em in the first round and see who gets out of the round.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if that's real. Golovkin, of course, fighting Carol Brook. So it's like, if you win, then you don't get too many brownie points because you're always fighting somebody smaller. But if you lose, then it's like, are you kidding me? Roman Gonzalez, you know, I always like watching Roman Gonzalez. You know, he fought that one guy, and it looked like he had a few chinks in his armor. So I guess it'll be more interesting to see when he fight the better guys and, you know, how he performs.
Yeah, because, I mean, it'll be a, yeah, like I said, he's going to be moving up to the junior bantamweight to face Carlos Quadras. And, you know, that'll be something where he's able to challenge for a title in that weight class. So, you know, if he's able to get through this, he'll be, you know, still undefeated with 45-46 wins to his record. And then I have to, you know, check out, you know, what else they have there at, you know, junior bantamweight. Let's see. They have, like, Kohei Kono and Naoya Inoue. So if you're able to have Gonzalez score this win against Carlos Quadras, he could possibly go up against Naoya Inoue, which would be probably a very good fight between those two, as those two, of course, you know, Roman Gonzalez is considered by many to be amongst the top guys, or the number one guy pound for pound. I think he is rated number one pound for pound in Ring Magazine, among others. And Naoya Inoue is also a guy that is, you know, considered by a few to be in a few pound for pound lists there. So if Gonzalez gets through this, then a potential fight against Hanman Naoya Inoue would be, you know, very good fight between those two. I think what they have here, I'm looking at the Ring Magazine. They don't have, like, a lineal champion there at junior bantamweight, but Inoue is ranked number one and Quadras is number two. So if, you know, Gonzalez is able to defeat Quadras, he'll probably jump up to number two there. And like I said, a potential fight between him and Inoue would be, you know, very big. I'm not necessarily sure if it would be, you know, in the States or whatever it is, but it would be very big overseas, and definitely would be big in Japan if they were able to make that happen. Just looking at other news and notes here, just seeing that recently got a report from Miguel Rivera on boxing, seeing that the young Puerto Rican fighter Felix Verdejo was involved in a motorcycle accident earlier today in Rio Grande, and was taken to a hospital in Rio Piedras, but don't necessarily have any updates in reference to the severity of his injuries. It said he wasn't, I mean, that he is in stable condition, but nothing as far as like any injuries suffered toward him. He is in line to have a world title shot, WBO title shot. Well, you know, being under Top Rank, there's only one, you know, organization they really deal with, and that's WBO. So he'll be in line to face the current WBO lightweight champion, Terry Flanagan, and they were given until August 20th to reach a deal before it goes up to a purse bid, but it may delay that deadline, although Bob Arum is trying to get that fight put together to be an undercard for Manny Pacquiao's fight on November 5th in the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas. So Felix Verdejo, you know, just was recently in a motorcycle accident, but the Sandy's in stable condition there, and he still may be in line to fight for the WBO lightweight championship. Let's see.
Yeah, just real quick. On there too.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just taking a quick look at an article where, as we know at this point now, the Olympics is underway, and there's a couple of fighters in the fighters that in the Olympics, that is, fighting for the respective countries that are pros and stuff like that. I think one name I was just looking at was Haddam Ndu. I forgot what division he was at, but he's definitely been a known name in the pro ranks, but he actually lost his first fight. Like I said, I think we talked about it before the show about the prospect of pros fighting in the Olympics. I'm totally against that, you know. But just as a side note, this, you know, with that going on right now, just a few pros here and there littered throughout the world that are fighting in the Olympics. So be interested to see what comes out of that. In fact, and when those pros can actually medal at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had, I'm not running wrong, score a win against Ignacio Perrin of Argentina in the lightweight division. Yeah, and like you were saying, he was trying to avoid the fate of Hassan Ndam Jikam, who, you know, basically lost his first fight in these Olympic qualifiers or whatever it is. So, if he's, you know, I'm really not a fan of, you know, these professionals going into the boxing ring to, you know, get gold medals. I think, you know, that kind of like stops the progress of these amateurs that are trying to get from, you know, the amateur ranks to the professional ranks. This is an opportunity for a lot of these, you know, amateur fighters to be noticed worldwide. So, you know, with these professionals coming in here like that, it kind of like, you know, takes out the ability or takes out the opportunity of these amateur fighters to do that. So, I mean, I have to see what's going on with these professional fighters here in these amateur or these Olympic ranks. But I'm also going to be on the lookout for Shields to see if she's be able to repeat as a gold medalist as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in her going on with the Olympics too. She's actually from my home state of Michigan, and she has a compelling story. And actually, I heard that she actually has a movie in the making about her life. So I really hope that she can do well and then inside the green and, of course, outside the as well. As far as hope, opportunities open up for her, that's a definitely good story coming out of Memphis for boxing.
True. I'll be on the lookout for that as well. I was trying to see if there's like any other notable things that to go through here. Just still waiting on to see if they're going to actually make a formal announcement in reference to the potential matchup between Danny Garcia and Andre Berto for Danny Garcia's WBC welterweight championship. Of course, you know, it's been talked about a good number of times that they will be able to fight each other. They were trying to see if they can fight it at the Boston Center, but hasn't been locked down as of yet. Hasn't really been official. So we're basically waiting on that. And also the Super Welterweight Championship fight, IBF Super Welterweight Championship fight between Jermall Charlo and Julian J. Rock Williams. That is scheduled for October 1st. They're trying to push that up to be that week of September 23rd. So, you know, basically, I'm going to be keeping my eyes open and my ears, you know, attentive to see what the latest update is for those two particular matchups and to see if those become official and what the date and location of them will be.
And
you go ahead, Terrell.
Yeah, I was gonna say even the proposal of Pacquiao fighting Vargas. I mean, what is the delay in picking an opponent here? Pick somebody and fight him. And because of the lack of the solid announcement for that, I think there's something else going on that's just probably preventing him from making that announcement and committing to that fight and everything. I mean, we all know he's a senator back in the Philippines, so I'm not sure if it's something that some responsibility back at home that he needs to attend to, because you know, with the calling out a fight, you got to do the training, there's a promotional tour and stuff like that, so that would take him out of the box for his job, at least a solid 2-3 months, you know, to call up a fight. So I'm like, why are you guys waiting? Why are you waiting to see you going to fight? You know what these guys are, so. Kind of weird.
Well, in that fight, he definitely fighting the right person to where he doesn't have to necessarily exert himself, you know, like against I am not calling him a real opponent. I am not calling him a real opponent, but against a real live dog in a fight, you have to really train, you know. I.e. like a Terrence Crawford or Mayweather or something like that. You know, he's fighting the right person to where he can, you know, take a minimum amount of time in the training camp and still come out there and win.
Yeah, that's the overall thought that we're having here with Jesse Vargas. I mean, I did see him live March 5th at the DC Armory against Saddam Ali, and he was able to, you know, basically use his size as an overall advantage against Saddam Ali. But this is Saddam Ali, who really didn't have that many fights at welterweight himself. You know, I kind of basically saw Saddam one other time, and that was on the undercard of Bernard Hopkins against Sergey Kovalev. And in that particular fight, he really didn't have to do that much in order to score the win. So he really didn't get much out of, you know, looking at Saddam Ali in that particular fight going up against Jesse Vargas. So while, you know, Saddam Ali was game in the first, you know, 2-3 rounds or so, once, you know, Vargas knew that he wasn't able to hurt, was not going to be able to be heard against Saddam Ali, he pretty much took over. But that's a whole different thing to fighting Manny Pacquiao, who, you know, scored another win against Timothy Bradley, who basically outboxed Jesse Vargas from round 1 to round 11, or basically round 1 to, you know, most of round 12 when Bradley was able to face Vargas. So, of course, for this, he, you know, Manny Pacquiao sees that he will have a clear, you know, advantage in this particular fight and really doesn't want to exert himself that much in his next fight. One of the interesting things that I'll have to look into is to see when Manny Pacquiao's particular contract with Top Rank is over. I think it's either at the end of this year or the end of next year. Probably is actually at the end of next year. So when it comes to, you know, actually trying to get out of the particular contract with Top Rank, I think Manny Pacquiao has a little bit of ways to go before that is able to take place. So he'll be, you know, under Bob M for, you know, a little while now. I forgot to add in that thing with Miguel Cotto. He's been trying to look for an opponent. They were trying to see if they could get an opponent for him for June, and, you know, wasn't able to do that. They were having talks about him potentially fighting Juan Manuel Marquez, but Marquez basically said, hey, it's got to be at 147. There was no fight. There's, you know, no particular way that he's going to fight above 147 pounds against Miguel Cotto. And, you know, I kind of see that because we're talking about Juan Manuel Marquez, who recently has had problems with his knee, has had multiple knee injuries. So he's not going to try to move up into another weight class to go up against Miguel Cotto with knee problems. Of course, we know that Miguel Cotto has fought somebody with knee problems before. So I guess he's trying to go against another guy that has knee problems to see if, you know, they can get him up to fight. So he's not able to do that. So my idea is, why doesn't a Roc Nation fighter fight another Roc Nation fighter, in that Miguel Cotto could go up against Demetrius Andrade at 154 pounds? Demetrius Andrade's there, young guy, undefeated, Roc Nation fighter, one of the highly rated guys there at 154 against Miguel Cotto, who's, you know, who's also rated at 154 pounds. And, you know, looking at Fight News rankings here, in the WBO, they have Demetrius Andrade at number 2 and Miguel Cotto at number 3. So, you know, these two guys, if they go against each other, they'll pretty much be the top guy at the top contender for the WBO belt, as Liam Smith will be defending his WBO title against Canelo Alvarez on September 17th. So I'm like, why not have those two guys fight each other?
Because the Heyman formula doesn't work for everybody. And what I consider the Heyman formula is keep the money in-house, and if you lose, you're still going to be okay. I don't think that worked for Roc Nation. You know, if one of them guys lose, then they lose their leverage on two good stars, you know, because Cotto already on his way out, and Andre is on his way up. If he loses to Cotto to somebody who's on his way out, then now Andre is derailed. Versus, you know, if you on the Heyman side and you lose, you still can get a couple of big fights, i.e. Chris Arreola, you know. I just don't think it's the same, you know, because they don't have that leverage to still bring the masses to see you and then give you money or whatever.
That's a pretty good point of reference to Andre. Even though Cotto was a high profile guy, you know, with him being the fact that he's basically on his way out, if Andre, you know, suffers a loss against Miguel Cotto, I don't think that, you know, he'll be able to get back into the game as far as like a notable fight. He's probably, you know, better off trying to, you know, go against another guy at 154 pounds like a Gabe Rosado or a who else is out there? Maybe a Charles Hadley or even Baines if Baines is still trying to get into the game, because I don't think Andrade is going to be able to face any of those other guys that are holding, you know, any of the title belts with Heyman managing Charlo, Lara, I mean, the Charlo brothers and Lara. So this may be, you know, going after the WBO championship may be his only shot at, you know, trying to get a title belt in that division. You have something to say on this, Terrell?
Well, no, I think it's I don't really have much after that. I'm just like, it would be great, like, if Cotto, Andre could fight. He's one of those kind of elusive guys. You could put Jacobs in there, Andre together, kind of like one of those elusive guys that their careers has never really come to fruition yet, you know. Are they going to be at the top, or are they going to stay like a B-level fighter? So that would be great if we could see that. Like Mike said, the likelihood of us of seeing it is probably not going to happen. That's boxing, you know. But, I mean, back to Cotto, he's going to get a couple more fights. At this point, it looks like probably next year will be his last year in boxing, you know. I see him have his last fight next year, next June, at the Puerto Rican, up in New York, during the weekend of the Puerto Rican Day Parade. That would be a great time for him to book up on out of the game, because at this point now, there's time for him to get back into a fight for this year. I hope he does. I mean, there's tons of people out there who can fight. Hell, he could fight like a Baines, like you said, for example. That's not a dangerous fight. That's not a brutal fight by any chance, by any means, you know. But hopefully he's getting back in the game and getting back in there and maybe get there, like I said, next year, you know.
Yeah, it's something to where, you know, Andrade kind of like is, you know, caught in a pretty weird predicament there, where he's not, you know, able to seriously challenge for most of the belts there because of promotional issues, but still has that opportunity to try to get that WBO belt. But if he's able to, you know, possibly move up against a Daniel Jacobs in the future, then, you know, that could be an option for Demetrius Andrade. But as far as, like, Miguel Cotto goes, if he doesn't really, you know, get a fight here locked up soon, it'll basically look like he'll just, you know, fade out and just say, hey, there's nothing else out there, so I'll just go ahead and retire quietly or something like that. So that's probably going to be the situation there for Miguel Cotto. You know, on that note, pretty much I'll close it out here. Be sure to catch the sister show, the CAC on Sports, on Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. Like I said, at the end of every show, point of boxing is a hit and I get hit, not a standing trade. On that note, I'm out, folks. Have a good evening.
Yep.